Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, you! Come out here on the floor. Let's rock some more. Come out of here on the floor. Honey, let's rock some more, yeah. Now when you get out here, don't you have no fear. Put your hands on your hips and let your backbone lift and work out.
Absolutely. You can say, and they have many times, that James Brown is the hardest working man in show business. YouTube search Jackie Wilson. James Bostic here, a conservative perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio at Blog Talk Radio. We do it live twice a week, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have a recorded version of the program that goes out Sunday afternoons at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as well on the Mojo 5.0 radio network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be, because it is some of the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio that you're going to find out there anywhere, just like the top flight programming that we have available here for you at Patriot Nation Radio. As I said, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I'm live with a conservative's perspective. Every other Monday, and flat out knocking it out of the park every single time, my man, my brother, the Benfro, Gary Benford with United Patriots Uprising. That's every other Monday. Wednesdays at 7 p.m., well-known author and publisher from Brownie Fox Publication, Kevin White, is with us with the American Allegiance Program. Thursday, El Guapo, the handsome one himself, Mark Hoffman, back-to-back with me on Thursdays for a long-running, outstanding 1-2 punch in alternative broadcasting, Patriot Nation Radio Live. Good to be here with you. It's kind of a bittersweet day, really. Today was the first official day of school. You know, we've had two first days already. We had a first day for the ninth graders and the 10th graders by themselves, walk around the building. For those of you who don't know, my daytime gig is I work at the high school that I graduated from. So I've kind of got that whole welcome back Cotter thing going for me, and I dig that. My brother is the same way. We moved when he graduated, so I attended a different high school. But we both work. We both teach in the high schools that we graduated from, respectively, and we're really proud. So today was the first day. Today was the first day of school. As I said, Wednesday, the 9th and 10th graders came to look around, and then they stayed home. And the next day, the 11th and 12th graders came in and did their thing. And today, everybody came in, and we just let God sort them out. And that's exactly what happened. So it was a great day. This is my 29th first day of school. If you count that first 12, where I wasn't exactly actively engaged, at least not like I am now, the 29 first days of school, and every one of them, at least the last 17, have been pretty exciting, and I've been happy to be there with it. On a sad note, though, a really good guy wound up giving up the ghost today. His name was Presley Stutz, and Presley Stutz was fundamentally a tip of the spear patriot. He's a former Navy chaplain, and he was the man who was responsible for creating the event Rock the Red. And I know I've talked to you about this many times. It was at the very first Rock the Red I attended where I met my podcasting friends, longtime friends, Don Newen and Donna Fiducia. I was able to meet face-to-face with these folks. I was able to meet face-to-face with my buddy Gary Binford, and that was an historic weekend for he and I, because that's what started him on the path to radio broadcasting. You're welcome, Gary. I am a kingmaker, and that's what I've done with you, and I'm proud of it. Anyway, Presley, sadly, after struggling for about 3 weeks with COVID-19 virus, was unable to shake it off. And good man left us this day, a good man. As I have told you guys many, many times, I love radio. You know that I'm extremely committed to doing a really good program for you guys and any broadcast that I'm involved with. And one of my commitments to you is that I'm going to bring you the very best guests that I can find. No quacks, no hacks, no screwballs. Nobody that is not worthy of listening to. And you know, we've talked with Dr. Sebastian Gorka. We've talked with friends of the program, Claire Lopez, former CIA analyst, Trevor Loudon, probably the world's, well, at least America's foremost expert on communist infiltration into the halls of government. Our good friend, Michael Cutler, 30 years as an Immigration Naturalization Service, friend of the program and a very good friend to me, I'm happy to say. And tonight is absolutely no exception. On Monday night, our guest, former Louisiana State Senator Mr. Albert Gilroy, was on Gary Binford's program. And for those of you who are not familiar with Mr. Gilroy, you're in for a treat. It is a remarkable story. We have him with us tonight. I have looked forward to this for a long time. It is a man that I have admired and respected for a long time since he made his stand when I first found out about him as a Democrat. In the deep South, in the deep Democrat South, and in 2013, he switched his party affiliation, and he took a lot of heat. He took tremendous backlash on that. Probably still suffers from it today. But he's with us tonight. We're going to talk about his life, his times, his achievements, ladies and gentlemen. I am very proud, a conservative's perspective, very proud to have with us tonight Mr. Albert Gilroy. Senator, welcome to A Conservative's Perspective, sir. We're very happy to have you with us.
James, thank you for letting me be here with you and sharing your audience with me.
You came up as a young man in the Deep South. You were born in, you were born in 1944. Pretty much Jim Crow South in those days, but where you came from were very humble beginnings, and like so many men who achieve big things, good things, you came from humble beginnings, and my impression was when I heard your interview with Gary, you are not unmindful of those beginnings. You carry them with you to this day. Your childhood in the Deep South and the things that happened to you that brought you on this path, I would like for you, if you would, please, to share some of that with us.
I would love to. My granddaddy was born a slave, and he, after slavery was over, he stayed with his former master and purchased the property that he was born on, and we still live there. That's where my office is, right? As a matter of fact, that's where I'm sitting right this minute. I grew up very near the farming town of Lautell, and that is where I worked in the fields as a child. I live in those same cornfields that I worked in many, many years ago. Right now, I mean, when I leave my office, that is where I would go to sit on my porch and sip a glass of wine and maybe smoke a good cigar. It was the Deep South. It was the Jim Crow South. I guess one of my first memories is a black man who had a relationship with a white woman, and he was tried, convicted, and sentenced to death. I remember it, although I was 4 years old, because I remember the men sticking shotguns and rifles down their pants legs, stuffing their shirts and jackets with handguns, because it was a dangerous time. This man escaped from custody, and there was a two-week-long search for him. And every black male of every age was in danger at that time. I particularly remember it, not only because of the guns that the men were carrying around, but as a little boy, our mothers had to arm themselves and escort us across the street for us to play with each other. And we couldn't play outside. We had to play only in the house until this man was found and executed. My first recollection of the criminal justice system. Well, my second one was at age 15 when I was arrested for what was called colored trespass in the public library, where black folk could not go, and young black folk, as I was at that time, could not get books. Soon after that, about 3 years after that, I was expelled from one of the local universities for my civil rights writings. And
I would like to talk about that for just a moment, Senator. I was reading that in your biography, and it said that they gave you the boot because you had called the Louisiana senator at that time, Allen Ellender, a lunatic. And I'd read that in your biography, and I wanted to talk to you about that and what had happened in that situation.
Well, I'd been warned at least a dozen times by the school's administration that I should stop writing this crazy stuff like, America, if I fight your wars and pay your taxes, I'm not going to go around the back door of the courthouse.
Right.
And the U.S. senator from Louisiana went to South Africa, made some scurrilous, horrible remarks about Africa, Africans, African Americans, and so I took him to task properly in an editorial, and I did. The title of it was "Lunatic Insults America." Lunatics insults blacks, and very shortly, I think the day after it was published, a very large young man came to my dormitory room. Said, "Are you Elbert Gillery?" "Yes." He had on bib overalls and a badge, and he was holding a double-barrel sawed-off shotgun. He escorted me off campus and very eloquently explained that I should never return my blank, 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 blank to that campus, and that it would be very good and for my family to be safe for me to remove my blank, 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 blank from the environs of the state of Louisiana.
Wow.
He was quite eloquent in his presentation, particularly because I was looking down the barrel of a loaded and cocked double-barrel shotgun. That is an eloquent presentation. And so I took his advice, and I did not return to that campus for many years. And I did remove myself from Louisiana very shortly thereafter. It was ultimately one of the best things that could have happened to me, because I was able to get a world-class education as a result of it, and great experiences. But at the time, it was not a good feeling.
So you left the university, and it was subsequently you joined the Navy, and this is what you're talking about in terms of the richness of the experiences that you had in
Absolutely.
The early 1960s. I'm sorry, go ahead.
In the very early 1960s, I was a 16-year-old college freshman in 61, and was expelled in 63.
So, in I'm reluctant to bring this up because, and I'll happily tell you, when it comes to the issue of race and racism, I'm somewhat at a loss to speak about it, because living in West Virginia, here in the coal fields, at the end of the day, when the men came out of the coal mines, which so many men throughout this part of the state, the southwestern part of the state that I live in, at the end of the day, when they came out of the coal mines, everybody was black.
Yes, yes.
And the black men and white men, everybody's doing the same jobs. Everybody's working just as hard. And like I said, at the end of the day, everybody came out of the coal mines black. And there was segregation. Were there instances of racism that I can remember? Some, but again, in my own personal experience, I rarely saw a lot of that. And to me, the subject is one, not necessarily that I'm loath to talk about, but fundamentally ignorant on. So sometimes I'm reluctant to engage in that. And I'm the reason I bring this up is because, having lived through those extreme times in the Deep South, the Democrat South, the Dixiecrat South, and Jim Crow, as you see what's happening today with Occupy Wall Street, with Antifa, with Black Lives Matter, with all these racially divisive issues and events that have taken place and further been capitalized upon by these forces that foment this division, is it worse today? Is the division and the hatred worse today than it was when you were a young man?
Absolutely. Even at the height of Jim Crow, even at its worst times during my lifetime, those incidents were, there were some laws that needed to be changed, and they were. But people to people, we stood shoulder to shoulder as Americans during World War II, during Korea, during Vietnam. We were not as divided as America is today. And it breaks my heart to see it. And there's no reason for it. I mean, if there are problems, then let us correct the problems and go forward. But you get things like critical race theory that teaches little children that one is an oppressor and one is the oppressed in their DNA, that they're born that way. I mean, that's just some crazy, ridiculous, divisive stuff that America needs to stamp out immediately.
When you decided in I think it was 2013, when you decided to switch party affiliations, how long a time did you consider this? Was there a road to Damascus moment where you looked at the ideology that you had subscribed to and you said, you know, this far and no further, or this is clearly not the vision that we started with? Or did it happen just at one event and you said, okay, that's it, I've had it?
No, it had been building for, I guess, two or three years. As I became a more senior senator and was involved in more policy discussions, I was always on the opposite side of the Democrats. They adopted positions that just didn't make sense with respect to gun control or abortion or school choice. We were always on opposite sides. And so I was considering, I just about decided that I was going to make the switch. My voting record certainly had been very conservative. But one day the head of the Democrat Party in Louisiana said that the only reason that anyone would be against Obamacare is because of the color of the president's skin. And I had been one of the persons, as a matter of fact, I was the first legislator in Louisiana to oppose Obamacare. When she said that, my mother called me. We were in session. I was on the floor of the Senate. Mom called and I answered my phone and she said, "Well, Elderly." Now, right then I knew that was a serious conversation because,
yep,
you know, call folks by their whole name. She said, "Elderly, did you hear what that woman said?" I knew exactly what she was talking about. I said, "Yes, Mom, I heard it." She said, "Well, did you say anything like that?" No, I didn't, Mother. "Well, are those the people you were with who said that?" I said, well, kind of. We belong to the same party. She said, "Well, listen, you just better be careful of the people that you're around. Don't bring dishonor upon our name." And this is a lifelong Democrat mother who was about 102 at the time that I had that conversation with her. And when I hung up the phone, I didn't even put the receiver down. I clicked over and called my registrar voters and became a Republican right then.
Mama's used that middle name, you better turn to.
Yes, indeed. There only about a half dozen times in my life that I could remember my mother calling me Elbert Lee.
Oh, I got you beat.
It was serious.
I have you beat. I was there by four. When this happened to you, and you right there, and you obviously knew that this, you know, you felt that conviction, otherwise you wouldn't have done it. How long was it after your fellow Democrat Party members made this discovery? And I'm sure you, this is not something that you hide, and I'm sure they found out about it within less than a day. How tough were they on you? And I know they had to be.
The conversation with my registrar of voters took place at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I announced the next morning, to my Senate colleagues, and then I went over to the House and let them know, because I had all these good friends over there. And some of them remained good friends, and some of them turned away.
When you made the video, and I had never seen the video, honestly, I had never seen the video until this week. I had always heard the audio. The first time I heard your video message, Why I Am a Republican, was the audio segment. I think it was on Sean Hannity's show. And that was the first time I had ever heard of Louisiana Senator Elbert Gilroy. And, Guillory. And I thought, to do what he's doing geographically where he is. And, you know, and I'm sure you will agree, we thought that the political climate was pretty divisive under Barack Obama. And you know, and we've seen completely different, and we know differently now. But even at that time, with the politically divisive climate that we had, and geographically where you were, plus moving so quickly from you know, rejecting that political ideology and embracing conservatism, to me, it seemed, and I'm sure to a lot of Americans, a really bold and principled stand. And you say, and I've heard you say, and I've read it on your site, that, you know, to you it wasn't that difficult a decision, but to those who were on the outside looking at it, it certainly seemed that way, especially in light of the backlash that came after you made this decision.
My entire life has been taught as a little boy to do what I believe is right, and to pray about it. And when I have a decision to make, when I was just that little kid that went to the public library, I did what I thought was right in the demonstrations, and I have scars on my body, but none on my soul, from the demonstrations in the late 50s. I was doing what was right. When I got thrown out of college, I was doing what was right. I mean, the people that told me to stop doing it, they told me that I was going to face the exact consequence of being expelled if I continued. And I continued because it was the right thing to do. When I switched, that was an easy decision to make. I wasn't facing guns or police dogs or fire hoses. I was in a safe environment. I knew that people were going to be upset. But that's not my issue. At the end of the day, I must face my parents, my grandparents when I die, and I must face my God. And if I can't do what's right on a day-to-day basis, then I will have great difficulty facing them. And that is not something that they would start by saying, Elbert Lee, as they called me to the gates of heaven. I don't want that. I want them to open their arms and say, Elbert, come on home.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with former Louisiana State Senator Mr. Elbert Gilroy. Senator, can you tell folks where they can find out more about you? And one last thing before you do that, one last question. You've been very gracious with your time, by the way, and I appreciate that, and I know my listeners do very, very much. As we are today as a society, and the tapestry of our society is remarkably frayed, what can you see? What do you see? What words of hope and encouragement, if you have any, could you share with us to point us in the direction of light at the end of this tunnel?
I think that each American right now should decide whether we want the traditional freedoms and liberties and opportunities that exist nowhere else on the face of the earth. Nowhere else. We have a great thing going on here. There are some people who are trying to destroy it, some people who are attacking it, some people who want to divide us and conquer us. We must make the decision. Do we go farther down, deeper down into the valley of chaos, or do we turn around and climb back up that mountain, up that hill, where we would enjoy that being that shining star on top of the hill? I ask every American to consider what we have to lose and to not let the charlatans divide us and conquer us, to not let the Marxists tear down what we have, destroy our energy production, our manufacturing production, all of those kinds of things. They want to destroy our economy. They want to destroy our values. Don't let them, please.
Senator, are you still there?
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Right. Something happened in my headset, and I didn't hear you. Thank you very much once again, Senator. You've done us a great honor. I appreciate tremendously your story, and I have a great deal of admiration and respect for you. And I'm very happy that you decided to accept our invitation, and it is a standing one. I would like very much for you to come back and visit with us again sometime. Before you go, if you could tell folks about your political action committee.
Albert Guillory's America is our political action committee, and we are involved in races across the country. Please look at us, Albert Guillory YouTube, Albert Lee Guillory YouTube, but on Facebook, on the internet, either Albert Guillory's America or Albert Guillory. And you can find out more of what we're doing and where we're doing it. And please send us your advice and your prayers.
Senator, thank you so much once again for being honest. I really do appreciate it. My commitment to my audience is to bring them the very best guests that I can find. You're absolutely no exception. And thank you once again.
Thank you. I genuinely am honored by your invitation and by your friendship. I look forward to a deeper friendship with you.
I will be in touch, Senator. Thank you so very much once again. Ladies and gentlemen, Senator, former Louisiana State Senator Albert Guillory, thank you, sir, very much.
Thank you.
That was awesome. Terrific stuff there. Albert Lee Guillory. And it was an historic thing. When he did that, and I urge all of you, go to YouTube. It's called Why I Am a Republican, Albert Lee Guillory. And listen to it. Watch it. Articulate. On point. Eloquent. Wow, that was awesome. Tell you what, we're going to take a little break, and we will be back with more of a conservative perspective after this brief musical interlude. We'll be back on the other side of this. You're listening to ACP on Patriot Nation Radio.
Well, it's lonesome in this old town. Everybody puts me down. I'm a face without a name, just walking in the rain, going back to Houston, Houston, Houston. I got holes in both of my shoes while I'm a walking case of the blues. Saw a dollar yesterday, but the wind blew it away. Going back to Houston, Houston, Houston. I haven't eaten in about a week. I'm so hungry when I walk, I squeak. nobody calls me friend. It's sad the shape I'm in, going back to Houston, Houston, Houston. Back to Houston, Houston, Houston. I got a girl with hell for me. Well, at least she said she'd be. I got a home and a big warm bed and a feather pillow for my head. Going back to Houston, Houston, Houston. Well, it's lonesome in this old town. Everybody puts me down. I'm a face without a name, just walking in the rain. Going back to Houston, Houston, Houston. Going back to Houston, Houston. How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in a boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just the beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. I've sunshine enough to spread. It's just like the fella said. Tell me quick, ain't love a kick in the head? Said, ain't that a kick in the head? Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in a boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just the beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. She's telling me we'll be wed. She's picked out a king-size bed. I couldn't feel any better, or I'd be dead. Tell me quick, oh, ain't love a kick? Tell me quick, ain't love a kick?
Yeah. Dean Martin, ladies and gentlemen, the one guy Frank Sinatra wished he could be. James Bostic here, a conservative perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network, doing it live Tuesdays, Thursdays, Eastern Standard Time. We have a recorded incarnation of the program that goes out on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you really ought to be. Because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio you're going to find out there. Top-notch programming, top-shelf hosts, mojo50.com. Well, basically, letting the country go to hell in a handbasket since he took his hand off the Bible, Joe Biden back on vacation, doing an extended weekend off in Delaware. There is a lot This guy is pathetic. I don't know what else to say. This guy is pathetic. Right now, the best estimates, anywhere from 13 to 15,000 Americans still in Afghanistan. Now, I have a feeling, and I'm not for sure, I haven't been able to research it thoroughly yet because we've had a few things going on here. Where exactly in Afghanistan are those 15,000 Americans? Now, Afghanistan, just for a point of reference, is an area the size fundamentally of Texas. And luckily, I wasn't absent in geography that class, in geography class that day, or asleep, because I remember Texas is a pretty big ass state. 15,000 people in an area the size of Texas, that's a pretty small dot. I don't think all those 15,000 Americans were in Kabul. I don't think those 15,000 Americans were just hanging out within a mile of the butcher of Kabul, Hamid Karzai International Airport. I think it's very safe to assume that there is probably a pretty decent-sized fraction of those 15,000 Americans that are deep in country. Maybe they're in one of the other nine provinces. Maybe they're in a capital city there. Maybe they're not. Most likely being contractors who were probably close to American military installations, but there are no American military installations. They've been overrun by the Taliban. Tucker Carlson was talking with Lara Logan about this just last night. I'm going to go ahead and play the clip. There's something in it that Lara Logan says. I'm not going to give it away or any of that, but there's something here that she says that touches upon what we all know, but yet at the same time have been somewhat reluctant to say.
Even if they've been translators. Lara Logan is one of the very few journalists who actually knows a lot about Afghanistan. She lived there. And what might happen if we import millions of Afghans into our country? We just finished talking to her for an in-depth conversation on Tucker Carlson today, and we decided to bring you part of it tonight. Here it is. So tell us what you think is going on in Afghanistan now. I know it's a broad question, but give us the overview.
Well, essentially what you're looking at is the collapse of the U.S. will to continue in Afghanistan. I think what people really missed in the whole conversation is that the United States has the power to effect anything, and the Afghans know that. So what's really interesting about living on the ground with people in a country like Afghanistan is that you get to see, when you take away the prism of, you know, political spin and parties and, you know, all the trappings that we have that obscure the truth from us in the U.S., these people, they teach you how to look at things in their most basic form.
Yes, that is so true.
That's what they do,
yes.
And that's how they look at it. So they know, for example, the United States could bomb the Taliban supply lines right now. They're all coming from Pakistan. Everybody knows it. In fact, they're coming right through the Sfin Boldak border crossing, one of the early ones that the Taliban took in the beginning of this offensive. They know that the Taliban doesn't exist without Pakistan. Right, and the Pakistani ISI. They know that the United States...
ISI being the Pakistani Intelligence Service.
Right. And they know the United States funds the entire defense budget of the Pakistani military and intelligence services. So, for example, you could stop the money. You could stop the remittances of Pakistanis living in the United States. You could put sanctions. You could have visas. You know, the whole... Everyone, every time you try to address this issue, the immediate response for 20 years of this war has been, oh, you're advocating for war in Pakistan. No, you're not. What they know is there are many things the United States could do right now to change what has happened and is happening in Afghanistan, and they're not doing it.
Wait, can I just pause? I'm asking you a series of dumb questions. Why would the U.S. government be funding the Pakistani military and its intelligence services?
You know, okay, so that's a fantastic question, and really is one for the U.S. government. But what I can tell you is that when we hear about the bureaucracy that is on Capitol Hill, which are the bureaucrats who survive from administration to administration, this has been their policy. They have pushed through the Bush administration, through Clinton, through Obama, through Trump, and now to Biden, that because Pakistan is a nuclear nation, they are the only country in that region that actually matters. In fact, Joe Biden told Afghan's President Hamid, when it was Hamid Karzai was still in power, exactly that. On his listening tour after Obama won, he said to him, we don't care about Afghanistan. And we believe that Pakistan is the most important country in that region, and they always will be. And that was that message never, ever changed. And what you're seeing in Afghanistan today is the results of that policy, because the Taliban leadership is based in Pakistan. I mean,
yes.
The Quetta Shura, the Peshawar Shura, and the Miram Shah Shura, those are the three leadership councils that cover the entire war for the Taliban in Afghanistan. They are not just in Pakistan. They are in the loving and warm embrace of the ISI, who recruits on their behalf, when who orders Pakistanis in the tribal areas to give up their children to go and fight. They don't have a choice sometimes. And the United States has known this from day one. I mean, this is the staggering part to me, is that when you hear this debate, the intelligence agencies failed to see this. Seriously? Seriously. The NSA is known as the crown jewel of intelligence collection in the world. There isn't a digital signature in existence that they don't collect and store and analyze and have algorithms and everything else to sort through. The idea that they missed this, do you know what it takes to do an invasion like this? You have to stage forces. You have to plan. You have to have meetings. You have to have, you know, weapons that are moving in.
I'm looking at our producers. Are you listening to this?
I mean, you have
no,
to have deals.
You're making keep going.
I mean, it's like, it's so ridiculous. It's as ridiculous as believing that Ahmed Chalabi, some Iranian refugee in the U.S., persuaded the U.S. government to go to war. I mean, that's literally our narrative on the Iraq war. Seriously?
Yes.
I mean, we get so caught up in the weeds of this. What they want you to believe is that Afghanistan is complicated. Because if you complicate it, it's a tactic in information warfare called ambiguity increasing. So now we're all talking about the corruption and the this and the that, and there's all these complex parts. But at its heart, every single thing in the world, in your personal life, professionally, on the global stage, at its heart, it's very simple. It always comes down to one thing, one or two things. And in this case, in Afghanistan, this comes down to the fact that the United States wants this outcome. Whoever is in power right now, whoever is really pulling the strings, and I don't know that, they could do anything they want to change this, and they're not. And you see that on the southern border. You see that with critical race theory. You see that with the violations of big tech. You see it with, I mean, in a thousand different ways, you see it all around you. And what you know from that...
You're telling the truth right now.
Yes.
I can just feel, I mean, you know, sometimes you, when you're listening to someone unveil an insight and you haven't tested it against anything, but you just know it's right, what you're saying is right.
It's very simple. You know, you can have a marriage and, you know, be thinking, should I stay with my wife, should I leave my wife? It can be very complicated. But in the end, it'll come down to one critical, defining, major thing. And everything else flows from that. And that's exactly where we're at in Afghanistan. The United States government could change this even today, and they don't do it. They don't use the leverage they have with Pakistan. They'll give you 5,000 reasons, but it doesn't matter. They don't tell you the national security threat posed by letting the cartels come across the southern border, do they? They only have a conversation about one thing, the humanitarian aspect. They never address that. Well, they're not addressing right now. You know what they're not addressing? All of the Al-Qaeda and other Islamic terrorist literature and communications that they're picking up that are celebrating this as a massive defeat. They're not talking about why the Taliban are dismantling advanced U.S. military equipment and sending it back over the border to Pakistan. And worse, they're not stopping it. We are the NSA and the National Geospatial Agency, which controls the satellites, and all of these other arms of the United States government are watching this happen in real time. They are seeing advanced U.S. military equipment going over the border into Iran and going into Pakistan, and they're doing nothing to stop it. Why not? So what the Afghans will tell you, what they will tell you is that the United States chose this outcome.
Laura Logan, amazing person, amazing.
Ouch. You get that? They chose this outcome. Nothing was destroyed at any of these military installations. Nothing. Not the first rifle, not the first pistol, not the first drone, not the first ammunition dump. None of it. It was abandoned in place. The Biden administration fundamentally gave the Taliban all the arms, weapons, and munitions that the United States military in their training and advisory capacity had there, as well as the Afghan military. And she's absolutely right. In Muslim avenues, this is being seen and celebrated as an ignominious defeat. Everybody references Saigon, and you know, the average median age in the United States is right around 36 and a half years old. Let me do some math here and see what year it was, 36 and a half years ago. 2000, this is 20. It was a while back. So these are, but I guess the point I'm making, these people that we're talking about here, so many people in this country were born after April 30th, 1975, when the embassy was evacuated in Saigon. And they don't know anything about it. I'm here to tell you. I'm in the school business. They don't know. They do not understand. And that has been considered by historians for years as an ignominious defeat. It was an abandonment of policy that had been put in place by, it was abandoned by the progressive and the Marxist left as they were making inroads into Washington, D.C. at that time. Plus, we were also dealing with the aftermath of the Nixon resignation, and these people were in high dudgeon, these progressive leftists that were running Congress at that time, the Senate. This is infinitely worse. We not only chose to give them weapons, serious weapons, drones. You know what they hang off of drones? Missiles. Yeah. At least 100 armored vehicles. Who knows how many rifles, pistols, hand grenades, mortars, rockets, rocket launchers, jeeps, fuel, and 15,000 hostages. How long do you think it's going to be before the beheadings take place? You remember those videos from the Obama administration? They were putting people in cages and dropping them in swimming pools with underwater cameras to film them as they drown. They would immolate people. They would slit their throats on video. Homosexuals thrown off the top of buildings. I mean, by the way, all these things that these guys do, incidentally, throwing gay people off the tops of buildings, the habitual rape of women and girls and boys, because these guys are creeps and perverts, because they don't care if there's not a woman around. If there's not a woman around, they'll grab some kid. It's called bacha batsi. Literally means boy play. And the U.S. military personnel were instructed to ignore it, even if it was taking place on U.S. military installations. Just let these nasty little buggers do whatever they want to anyone. How long do you think it's going to be? You can tell by the CYA language that the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of State, even the damn president himself, is using to qualify and let us know, they're telegraphing us, be prepared, because we're not going to get them all out. And they've already said from the beginning of this, the evacuation of Americans would not be the priority over Afghan refugees. Think about that for a minute. Would not be the priority over Afghan refugees. These people are subhuman. This is 5th century. You and I both know what's going to happen to these Americans that don't get out of there. The State Department won't even say how many Americans they think are stranded. Best guess, like I said, anywhere from 13 to 15,000 Americans are trapped by the Taliban. Joe Biden goes on vacation again. I was talking with my friend Michael Cutler. I got to wrap this up. I got a few more minutes. I was talking with my friend Mike Cutler after the show when he joined us on Tuesday. And the question was basically, you know, how many hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans are going to be butchered in the city streets of Afghanistan because the Biden administration said, screw it, because that's what they're doing. You heard all the different ways that the United States government could affect what's going on here and bring pressure to bear on these people to bring them in line. It isn't being done. It isn't being done because, like Laura Logan said, someone has chosen this particular outcome. Whoever it may be sure doesn't have the interests of the United States at heart. If they're not talking about it on the news, if they're not talking about this potential threat, this danger to American people, you know, these American citizens that are trapped over there, that's because they know what's coming too. It's going to be a tidal wave of blood and violence. It's not going to be an exaggeration. You're going to see people being accused of being homosexuals, tossed off buildings. You're going to see people burned. You're going to see people drowned. You're going to see people pulled apart by four-wheelers. You're going to see firing squads. You're going to see beheadings. You're going to see throat slittings because they're going to record it. And the execrable bastards at Twitter and YouTube and Instagram and everywhere else will not hesitate to allow it to be shown. Stop and think about the magnitude of this. These are barbaric, evil people. They rejoice in violence. They rejoice in terror and bloodletting. They rejoice in the fear that they spread. They are violent. They are bloodthirsty and tyrannical. And there is no place on the world stage for anything but extermination of these people. And that's all the time. I preach long enough. I'm looking at the clock. El Guapo is up next, the handsome one. As a matter of fact, I'm going to pull him on here right now. Hey, Mark, how is everything?
What's happening? How do I sound? Good, loud, and clear.
You sound beautiful, baby. Yeah, you sound terrific. I was preaching a little bit there, got wound up. I didn't mean to cut into your program. I know you got some great stuff going on tonight. with the Children's Rescue Initiative, and I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you, ladies and gentlemen, El Guapo, the handsome one, Mr. Markoff. And Mark, have a terrific show.
Thanks a lot, James. And there you have it, folks. That's James Bostic and A Conservative's Perspective, heard two nights a week here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you don't want to miss our great lineup. We have the American Experience with the smoothest voice in talk radio, Ron Edwards on Sundays with his simulcast through our network, 3 p.m. on Sundays. And, of course, United Patriots Uprising with Gary Binford, just having some amazing episodes. If you haven't heard one of his episodes, go back and listen to any of them. Start with the last one. Amazing. You know, just shining a light on what critical race theory is with some amazing guests. General Flynn back July 26th. Great stuff there with Gary Binford and the United Patriots Uprising. And then we have Wednesday's The American Allegiance show with author Kevin White. You want to check out his book, Growing Up White, and listen to his show, 7 p.m. Wednesdays. So we got a full lineup 5 days a week, Sunday through Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. on Sundays. We have great things going on, folks. We're just trying to spread the truth. And, you know, one of the biggest things that I've always talked about is, you know, illegal immigration and human trafficking. And human trafficking, of course, is not just at the southern border of the United States. And young girls and women are being sold into modern-day slavery today as we're speaking right now. It's pretty incredible. Amazing stuff.
You wouldn't think of buying a child, but it happens every day. Visit thechildrensrescue.org to find out how you can join the team fighting human trafficking and child slavery and take the price tag off a child. thechildrensrescue.org.
And we're going to talk to Bruce Ledeboo here. He is working very hard to free young women and girls from modern-day slavery, some of it religious and other extremist, are taking children and women into slavery.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
You think if I asked for that girl, that they would sell her to me? You think if I asked for that older girl, she'd say, sell her to me? Yeah. I want to sleep with her.
Rescuing children from slavery is never easy. There is a multitude of challenges. We're dealing with countries that are so difficult to get in, difficult to operate in. You know, we're dealing with corruption. We're dealing with religious-based slavery. We're dealing with the fact that money is at the base of all this. Nobody wants to lose their profit. So how do you solve that? Well, we solved it by getting the right people involved, having teams that are highly trained, specialists in language, specialists in technology, and all the other different elements that we need. We have people in countries all over the world that are working with us because they have a heart to see people rescued from this horrible modern-day tragedy. And as of today, we've rescued 2,318 people from modern slavery.
All right, go. Let's go.
I'm Bruce Ledeboo. I'm the director and founder of the Children's Rescue Initiative. If you go to thechildrensrescue.org, you can see how to be involved.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, our featured guest, Bruce Ledeboo. Did I say that right?
Yeah, it's Ledeboo.
Ledeboo. I get my name butchered all the time, too, believe it or not, just in the way people spell it. It's easy to say, but they never spell it right. Hoffman.
Yeah.
Bruce, I was on Facebook, and I came across your fine organization. And I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. 2,318 people rescued from modern-day slavery. Most people have no idea that modern-day slavery even exists. And here it is, 2021. Sorry, that's my Bluetooth going on and off. 2021, and we have slavery still. And, you know, we have folks in this country today who never experienced slavery but still want reparations, yet folks are actually in slavery and getting nothing but abuse and worse. What was the first thing, Bruce, that got you into rescuing kids and women and young girls from slavery?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you having me on your show.
Yes, sir.
It was kind of a progression, Mark. I was traveling in the former Soviet countries in the early 90s, and we had heard about human trafficking. We looked into it. I didn't find a whole lot about, but I was concerned. And then I think in 2003, I was over in Eastern Europe. We went underground, did a lot of investigation, found, you know, really horrible things. You know, there was girls in cages being sold like animals. And I still didn't know really what to do with it because it's a massive, massive undertaking. And then 2009, I was in Western Asia. And I had the opportunity to go out to what they called the slave fields. And I was horrified at what I saw. And before I left, I started rescuing people, just some kids that were from a rope factory that were out looking for food. We kind of got them into a place, and I wouldn't let them go back. And my host was horrified. He said, you know, we're going to lose our lives. Nobody's ever done this here before. This is way too dangerous. And that was the start of 7 or 8 years in that nation. And then we've spread out into a lot of different places. And we're working here in the U.S. also quietly right now, but it's getting bigger.
Right.
And so it was a progression. It was a massive learning curve. I had no one to learn from back in those days. I couldn't find really anybody that was, involved in this. I found out later there was some, but I just couldn't find anybody to talk to. So I had to learn how to do this on my own. Made a lot of mistakes. And then as we just kept growing and learning how to do it better.
That's pretty excellent. So, and you've now rescued 2,318. Since that video was put out, have you rescued more?
I think it's 2,333 right now.
Excellent.
And so with COVID, we couldn't get into a lot of places that we've been working. And so we had some people in those countries, getting one or two children out. And then, we have teams lined up to go out here this year and into next here in the United States, but also in various countries. And a lot of places we go, Mark, there's just been nobody else doing any work there.
Right.
And they estimate right now there's between 27 and 40 million people in modern slavery, more than any time in history.
Wow, that's incredible. And now with Afghanistan, what we're hearing about the women and children coming out of Afghanistan, you guys are going to try to help some of these poor folks that are have been destroyed now in less than 2 weeks by the Biden administration. Sorry, I said Obama. O'Biden administration, because these guys dropped the ball so bad, and there's so many people in perilous situations. I'm sure that trafficking and slavery is going to be part of it.
Well, I've worked in that part of the world quite a bit, and yeah, it's going to get really bad. There'll be so many people enslaved, whether it's sex slavery, labor slavery. This is a tragedy of massive proportions right now. I've been talking to people every day. We've been trying to help get some people out. I've been trying to make a lot of connections, and you know, the borders are closed. It's a bad situation.
It's really incredible to watch people so desperate to cling to the outside of an airplane as it's taking off. How desperate a situation do you have to be into where you will cling to a landing gear or to a wing and expect to make it? That's desperation at its most.
Yes, it is. I mean, we've had that happen on a very small scale where we've pulled vans into places and filled them with, you know, enslaved people and people trying to cling to the, you know, the side mirror or trying to climb on the top to get out. But what's happened over there is just, it's unimaginable. And the people that are going to lose their lives over the next days and weeks is really unacceptable. It could have been avoided.
Could you imagine you're an American on a mission, like with maybe your church, and you're trying to reach people, help people get medicine, get fed, that are in dark, dreary places. And now you're being told, get to the airport, but we can't assure you safe passage. Sorry, there's no one there to protect you. Like, what is that all about? That's unbelievable.
Yeah. I had a
and they
friend
don't even know how many.
Just, yeah, I had a friend that barely got out, a close friend, and he was texting me and said, man, it's getting really, really bad. And he was on a flight, I think one of the last flights that got out. But, slavery, human trafficking, just because of this dynamic is going to increase, no doubt
at all. And so if someone really now is hearing this message that there's an organization out there who is actually doing some great things, freeing people from this slavery, the Children's Rescue Initiative. Now, I played the video clip and it gave out some information. But give folks some information about your organization if they want to help, if they want to volunteer. Is there volunteer opportunities and things over there as well? So give out some info so if people want to get in touch, donate or whatever.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Yeah, there's a lot of ways to be involved. I mean, we do have rescue teams. We have investigative teams. We have people that work our command post. We have follow-up teams to rescued kids, survivor care. And then there's a lot of ways of volunteering from fundraising to help, you know, with our events, all those kind of things. So if they go into our website, which is thechildrensrescue.org, they can sign up for information. They can sign up to be on a team. There is a lot of training required, and so there is a vetting process. Not everybody gets to be a frontline operator, but we have a lot of ways for people to be involved, from, you know, somebody who's well trained now to, you know, grandma who just wants to help in some way, and they can, you know, contact us through the website and find out how they can be involved.
And that's childreninitiative.org?
It's the Children's Rescue. Yeah, thechildrensrescue.org.
Thechildrensrescue.org, folks. So if you want to go over there and just get informed at the Great Mission or donate or, there's a lot of opportunities there to actually make a difference in some young girl's horrified life right now. Can you imagine being 9 or 10 years old and being sold into slavery? When you're 10 years old, you're thinking about watching the Ninja Turtles and eating popcorn, you know what I mean? And these kids are being slow, and they're building and manufacturing and being, you know, put into situations that no 9, 10, 12, 14-year-old kid should be in. When I was 14 years old, I delivered the newspapers, you know what I mean? For little money on the weekends, I go roller skating. And some of these kids have no idea. And sometimes I think that's part of the problem with our great nation, is we've been so comfortable for so long that we just think it's never going to end. But We're in perilous situations all across this globe right now, and this horrible situation. The southern border is a mess as well. And what about coming at, you know, the other end of the of Mexico from Guatemala? Do you guys get down there and try to help people between Guatemala and Mexico and Peru and, you know, down in Central and South America?
I'm sorry, Mark. You broke up just a little bit there. I didn't hear the question.
So I was saying the southern border is a mess too. And
yes,
the other end of Mexico, Guatemala and, you know, Central and South America, do you guys get down there and get some work in too? Is it, because we know there's a lot of trafficking things going on there as well, right?
Well, I can't tell you really where we operate, but we are
Understood.
Involved in this hemisphere. And, you know, I've been talking to various people, and this southern border thing is an absolute tragedy also. You know, it's being used for drugs, human trafficking, and the people that I've talked to, whether it's a border agent or other, it's bad. And so, you know, I think they apprehended people from 167 nations now. And so
That's
there
crazy.
Is people coming, there is people coming to come across that border. And you know, some of them, they just want a better life, but there's a lot of them that are looking to exploit, you know, the weakness that we have there. And so, yeah, there's kids being trafficked there a lot.
Right. I didn't mean to put you on the spot there and almost, you know, ask you to give away your operations and locations where you're operating. I understand why you can't say something, because you're trying to rescue people in hostile areas at times, and telling them that you're coming is like a Democrat presidency. Hey, listen, we're going to bomb you tomorrow at noon, you know, and everybody leaves. So I understand fully,
we just...
so please forgive me.
Oh, no problem at all. We just have a high level of OPSEC and are really careful about anything public. So,
right.
But yeah, it's a crazy world right now, and human trafficking during this last period of COVID, you know, has really accelerated. And now with open border, and now with Afghanistan, it's just going to grow. And sometimes, Mark, I feel like we're trying to empty the ocean with a bucket, but our motto
right.
is, you know, the old starfish story, you know, it matters to that one. So we get
yep.
one, you know, if we get one kid out, we feel successful.
Right.
And but this year we're really gearing up and ramping everything up in this coming season.
That's pretty amazing, because I couldn't imagine, like I said, I didn't have a spectacular childhood. But in the realm of things, I had the best childhood. Even if my family life wasn't the greatest, I still had a roof over my head, 3 squares every day, a bed, running water, you know. so when you really
yeah.
look at it from a grown-up perspective, as a kid you think the world's coming to an end, but then you grow up and you go, well, you know, you see the light and go, it wasn't so bad after all, even though in some lives, it might be a horrible way that I grew up as a little kid. It's still better
yeah.
than what some of these children are going through now. Not even being trafficked or being forced into slavery. Some of the nations that they have to live in, that alone
yeah.
in some instances is horrible. You know, where they're born. And it's unfortunate that people have to take advantage of little kids and women that are in such poor situations. And I'm sure a lot of it's done by deception, no?
Yeah.
Come with me.
Well, there's a lot
I'll make everything great.
Yeah, that is one of the ways. And you know, the youngest girl that we rescued out of a brothel was 3 years old.
Oh, my
and
God.
And the average age for the last probably year and a half has been about 8 to 10 years old. And so there's a lot of ways that people get into slavery. Sometimes in these other nations, it's because of a natural disaster, you know, and traffickers go around looking for displaced children. It could be that parents have sold their children. We've encountered that a lot.
That's
maybe they're selling. Yeah, we don't understand that, but they sell one child to save seven, you know. And, yeah, we don't understand that, and it's beyond our comprehension, you know, in the way we think. And then, you know, there's kids that get taken, get kidnapped. Then there's recruiters that, like on the movie Taken, you know, they're looking for those girls. Or there's the boyfriend who gets the girlfriend, and he's really nice to her, and 6 months down the road, he introduces her to his friends, and then she's trafficked. A lot of different ways, a lot of different types. You know, there's labor slavery, and then there's sex trafficking, and there's, you know, debt bondage and different things. So, yeah, a lot of different ways. And in some of the countries I've operated in, one country, now this is a long time ago, we found out the girls had to sign a statement that they would give themselves to their bosses if they gave a job. And then that opens them up to being sold, you know, down the road somewhere. You know, it's and the traffickers are pretty sophisticated. They're pretty good at what right. they do. There's a global market. There's girls that are shipped to different countries. I've intercepted those at different times where they were getting ready to be sent to, like, maybe the Middle East or something. But, yeah, crazy stuff to work with, and it's just getting bigger.
What's the most bizarre rescue you were ever involved in, like that where you wouldn't expect or couldn't believe that it was happening?
Well, we pulled into a place that they were making bricks, a brick kiln one time, and the owner wasn't there, and so we loaded up 80 slaves and bolted. And, you know, we got followed. There was a contract on my life because of that. I, you know, they tried to take me out a few times, poisoned me one time where it took me well over a year to recover.
Wow.
But that was probably the craziest one we did, where we just, the owner wasn't there. We loaded up every vehicle we could find and we just took off. And,
that's amazing.
And just made them all disappear so they couldn't be found.
Right.
Sometimes when you
go into a place and you rescue something, do sometimes the people go, well, I was kind of comfortable there. Can I go back? Does anybody ever want to go back? I couldn't imagine, but you know, maybe they've been there for 10 years or something.
Yeah, it actually happens. Some of these slaves, Mark, are born into slavery.
Right.
We rescued a woman in her 90s that had never known a day of freedom in her life, and she just wanted to go home and die in her ancestral village. She
right.
kept hugging me, thick glasses. She passed away 2 weeks later, but she died as a free woman. And
amen.
But some of these kids are born into that, and we've rescued kids in their teens that had never left that brick field or never left that factory. We found out in one place we couldn't get into it. Children were chained to machines and would live and die chained to that machine.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's beyond horrendous the way these kids suffer. You know, we've been in places where children are beaten on a daily basis. We arrived at one place where two little girls had just been beaten to death. The owner was in a rage over something, and he took it out on these little girls. Pretty evil stuff right there.
It's incredible that just to think that it's the 21st century and this is going on. Like,
seems
really?
Like the world's going backwards.
You know, when I was a kid, it was like duck dodges in the 21st and a half century, you know, it was all fun and games. But here we are, people being sold into slavery. And it's 3 years old in a brothel. Like, to me, I can't even fathom that someone would be even interested in something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty evil. And, you know, when you think of it, there has to be a demand side of this. So there is literally millions of customers around the globe. tens of millions probably. So it's something that you and I can't understand. Why would a man want that? But it's a decadent mindset.
It's not even fathomable. Like, I can't understand it. But the only way it exists is if there's a demand. So that's what's even more demented about the whole thing, is it doesn't exist if there's no demand. So that means people are out there wanting this. And
yeah.
That's like, and we think that we got troubles. You know, it's really amazing what you guys are doing. And I'm proud to bring awareness to this situation and maybe get some donations or get some help for your organization, because 40 million people approximately in slavery and 2,333 have been saved by your group. And if we only had another 25 different groups doing the same thing, we might make some headway or more people to help.
Yeah, and there's some other really good groups out there. We've created a coalition of 10 organizations that are working together, and they're doing really good work. But it's going to take a massive concerted effort to really get this done.
Amen. So get out all the website information again. So we're rolling into the bottom of the hour, and different people tune in as the show progresses, and they may have missed it earlier in the show, how people can get in touch with Children's Rescue Initiative and help out.
Yeah, our website is thechildrensrescue.org, and if they go on there, there's a lot of different links they can click on, but it's thechildrensrescue.org.
That's great. And thank you so much for your time tonight. And please keep up the great work. Folks, you heard the website. Log on today. Tell all your friends and help this great organization save some of these women and children and kids that are sold into slavery every day in the millions and millions. Not a couple thousand. It's millions. And it's global. It's happening in places where you wouldn't even believe, like down the block, Some guy down the street in your neighborhood could possibly be trafficking people right through his living room, and you don't even know. It's that close, folks. It's not just down the block, though. It's globally. And now we have this tragedy unfolding in Afghanistan, and you see women and children are in the news because they're nowhere to be found. The only ones that are making any headway getting out are 20-something males, fighting-age males, again. That's all you see. So where are the women and the children? This is going to grow. When you think it would be no slavery, it's more slaves in modern slavery than ever in history. You heard it here on the Patriot Nation radio show, Children's Rescue Initiative, thechildrensrescueinitiative.org. Get out today and help out. Thanks again, Bruce. I appreciate it so much, sir. God bless you. And everything
you
do.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mark. Bye.
Yes, sir. Whew, amazing.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
Whew, that's some heavy-hitting stuff right there, folks, to think that that's even occurring today in our modern-day society with 30, 40 million people are in modern-day slavery, more than ever in the history of the world, enslaved right now. You know, people want to buy stuff in China and get it cheap. Well, guess what? You got children making your sneakers. You got children making your electronics. They're not making money. They're making somebody else money while they are suffering. And it's happening globally. It's pretty incredible. So now we have another huge topic, one that is near and dear because, everybody around us is getting sick. You can hear I still got a scratchy throat. I've been clearing my throat all night. Now, I did not have COVID. Well, maybe I did. I don't know. I got sick. I lived my life, and I did what I had to do, and now I'm getting better. My son's school is decimated. He's got 6-7 kids in his class. The county, one county south of me in Hillsborough County, they're claiming 5,600 students quarantined and self-isolating, and they're forcing these kids into the masks. You know, they're forcing them to have face diapers full of germs wrapped around their nose and mouth all day long, which to me is just a horrific situation. And I think the parents should stand up and send all their kids to schools with no masks anyway and say, look, everybody got sick. We got 5,600 people in quarantine. When we all come back, we're not bringing masks. We're not wearing masks. Wear your mask. We're not doing it. You know, people are getting sick all across this great state of Florida right now at breakneck pace. And me personally would prefer to have Mother Nature's vaccination and catch COVID and have natural antibodies and move on. Now, what's happening is, and what I believe the situation is they're not treating patients correctly because of money. This is my own opinion. I think it's based on a lot of good evidence and things I've seen and heard with my own eyes, that they're not treating patients on purpose with drugs that will save them because of money. You know, the more patients they get on ventilators, the more cash they get, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, money is the almighty driving force behind all of it. And so some folks are not getting the treatments they need. But believe it or not, in some states, and I am proud to say I am one of those states, and I saw this story on a friend's timeline, the great patriot here in Florida really fighting for the rights of American citizens. One of the squad, the Jexit squad, you may know the Jexit ladies, Michelle and Alexandra, that, you know, and others, Siggy and a few others, doing great things. And, well, Alexandra's grandpa got sick. And they weren't treating him for the COVID, even though he was COVID positive. And so, without further ado, I'm going to bring in my next guest, Alexandra, and she is going to tell the story of what happened next for her grandpa. It's a really great story for those of us who love the governor of the Sunshine State, Governor Ron DeSantis. Alexandra, welcome to the show. Welcome back. Return guests, folks.
Thank you so much, Mark, for having me again. I'm glad that you're feeling better as well.
Yes, indeed. Maybe I had it, maybe I didn't. I will never know.
Never know. But,
you know? But I did get my son tested because they're going crazy at school. So he's been home with a fever. He got a negative test. He gets to go back as soon as the fever's gone. They still don't want him in school with a fever. So, but he's negative. So I believe that whatever I had, I was probably negative too because he got what I had. See what I'm saying? So I'm indirectly negative based on his testing. So now let's fast forward. I mean, not fast forward, go in reverse to be right before your grandfather got sick. And and then we'll go from there. Tell the story, what happened with grandpa, because it's really awesome. I'm glad that he's doing well. I did send out some prayers for him when I saw he was sick and you were trying to get the help.
Yeah, so my grandfather was staying at Aviva, which is an independent living facility in Sarasota, Florida, which is where I was born and raised. And he slipped and fell in his bathroom. And he broke his hip, and he got hip replacement surgery. Thank God he recovered from the surgery. But there's another area at Aviva. It's called Anshin Pavilion Benderson, and Benderson is the rehabilitation center where my grandfather was getting physical therapy for his hip replacement surgery. And he had been there for about 4 weeks already getting physical therapy for his hip replacement surgery. And last Monday night, August 9th, my grandfather tested positive for COVID-19. Now, he was the only one that tested positive on his floor. He was on the third floor. None of the other residents were tested positive, and none of the employees were tested positive. My mother was actually with him the day before, and she tested negative for COVID. My mom is fully vaccinated. My grandfather is also fully vaccinated. My grandfather got the Pfizer shot. He got it, the first shot in December and the second shot in January, and he had no side effects. But all of a sudden he gets COVID August 9th.
See?
So it was interesting. So, you know, you would think my grandfather's 98 and a half years old. He's a World War II veteran. He served in the Air Corps. He worked on the Doolittle plane. Yeah,
awesome.
Great. And he's in great shape. He's a very strong man, great shape, you know, didn't really have any problems. You know, has a very strong immune system. So we're trying to. So my mother and I were trying to figure out where he got this COVID from. But what was interesting is, you know, a 98 and a half year old man gets COVID, but there's no treatment for him. So what did the people at Benderson do? They gave him Robitussin for his dry cough because he had a dry cough.
Wow. That's
so
it.
Then a couple days, so then a couple days later, his dry cough turned into a wet cough, and they said he had a little bit of fluid in his right lung. So they diagnosed him as having pneumonia. And my grandfather's never had pneumonia in his life. So they actually did treat the pneumonia. They gave him antibiotics. They gave him doxycycline. But he still was not treated for COVID. So my mother said to the facility, can you please test my father for COVID again? You know, maybe it was a false positive. You never know.
Right.
So they tested him Thursday night. They sent the results to the lab. The lab results came back Friday morning. He was tested positive for COVID again.
And that's 1 week ago today.
Yeah, 1 week ago. Actually, 1 week ago in a day, he was tested. So he was tested twice. So the first test was Monday night, positive. Second test was Thursday night. He was positive. On Thursday, as you know, our wonderful governor Ron DeSantis, he gave a press conference in Jacksonville, Florida, talking about the monocolloidal antibody shot with Regeneron in there, the IV infusion shot. And he was trying to put it in every facility all over the state of Florida. And he said, these facilities have it. We want to give it to, you know, the patients that are at high risk and get COVID immediately, and especially in hospitals. So, you know, my mother talked to the doctor about the shot, about getting my grandfather the Regeneron shot. And the doctor said he was familiar with it, but he had to go through a, quote, protocol to get the shot. So he had to write it in to Sarasota Memorial Hospital, and then they had to send over to infectious diseases, and infectious diseases had to approve of my grandfather getting the Regeneron. And my mother talked to the doctor about this earlier in the week. So he might have sent it out to Sarasota Memorial Hospital maybe Tuesday or Wednesday after my grandfather tested COVID for the first time, and we were still waiting for infectious diseases to approve of it. And then we had we were waiting the past weekend. My mother finally got in touch with the head of nursing, and the head of nursing said, we should be getting the Regeneron shot this weekend to your father. We're still waiting approval for infectious diseases. Well, Friday came, Saturday came, Sunday morning came, nothing happened. The doctor didn't call my mother back. We got no confirmation that infectious diseases approved my grandfather to get the Regeneron. So my mother and I said, we're going to take – go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
At this point, what's the condition of your grandfather?
At this point, the COVID's not getting treated. I'm sorry?
At this point, what was the condition of your grandfather? How was he feeling? How is he holding up now? It's many days into COVID. He's been tested positive twice. What's his condition now on Sunday?
So his oxygen levels remained high. So his oxygen levels were always between 96 and 99%, which is good. He didn't have a fever. He never had a fever. He never had chills. He never had body aches. He never had loss of smell. They said he had a little bit of loss of taste because they were trying to feed him. And my grandfather was like, I don't really want food. But he's 98 and a half years old. He doesn't eat a lot of food to begin with. And they weren't giving him foods that a person who's sick would get. They weren't giving him chicken soup. They weren't giving him tea. They gave him Ensure, which is lactose, which when you have a cough, you're going to cough up the lactose. You're going to cough up the phlegm. So it's not
really
smart or
wise
to give someone Ensure. Yeah, they say stay away from lactose when you're sick. They weren't giving him lemon. They weren't giving him any vitamins. We found out they weren't giving him zinc. They weren't giving him elderberry. They weren't giving him B12, B6, K2. take too, quercetin. They weren't giving him all of these things that you take when you have COVID. We also, my mother also asked the doctor, can you give him hydroxychloroquine? Can you give him ivermectin? And the doctor said, no, those do not work, and they are not FDA approved, which is,
what?
As we know, not true. Yeah.
Right.
That is what
we
the
know that that's malarkey.
Yeah, and he said we don't.
See,
we
that's
don't
the problem.
Mix, you know, we don't want to mix the Robitussin with ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, you know, because that's going to interfere. All they gave my grandfather was Robitussin, an antibiotic, and Mucinex. That's all they gave my grandfather as he was diagnosed positive for COVID, not once but twice. So
I'm wondering why these doctors are going along with the farce when they know it's bullcrap, when they know hydroxychloroquine is over 60 years in use treating rheumatoid arthritis and malaria for decades and decades with no side effects.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's this horrible, dangerous drug.
Yeah, I'll be honest on your show. I take ivermectin. I love it. I had a little bit of a cold. It fixed it right away. I feel more energized. I feel better. It took my cold away within hours. And I fly a lot, and it's great. And I just use the vitamins with the ivermectin. There is a website called FCCL. It's a frontline doctor website. You can look
right.
it up what to take with ivermectin, and you just take all your vitamins with it, and it works very quick, very fast. Fast forward to how the governor got involved. So my
yes.
mother and I said to each other on Sunday afternoon or Sunday morning after we watched Sunday Mornings with Maria Bartiromo, love Maria Bartiromo, we need to get in touch with the governor. You know, we need to, this is ridiculous. My father hasn't had the shot. We need to get in touch with Governor Ron DeSantis. So I called and emailed Governor Ron DeSantis and his staff. And I emailed him all about what's going on with my grandfather. And the next evening, Monday evening, the state EMS medical doctor, his name is Dr. Kenneth Shepke. He's always with Governor Ron DeSantis in the press conferences. Wonderful man. He called my mother back Monday night, and he said, "Don't worry, Mrs. Levine, we will get this taken care of. You know, they shouldn't have to wait for infectious diseases. We can override that. We'll have, it's called a strike team of three people going to the facility tomorrow morning, so meaning less than 24 hours, to administer the Regeneron shot to your father. Don't worry, Mrs. Levine. We will take care of it." And he did exactly what he said he was going to do. And Governor Ron DeSantis and Dr. Kenneth Shepke, they put this strike team together on Tuesday morning at around 11, a little after 11, and went to Benderson. And my grandfather was the first patient at Benderson to get the Regeneron shot. They did a sub-Q 2.5 milliliter infusion with Regeneron to my grandfather. Not only was my grandfather's life saved that day, but the strike team also saved many lives that day at Benderson. And I said,
amazing.
My family thanks Governor Ron DeSantis and Dr. Shepke from the bottom of our hearts for doing this. Because I swear, Mark, if we did not call Governor Ron DeSantis, infectious diseases would have never approved my grandfather. He never would have gotten Regeneron, and it would have been a real problem. And my grandfather, my mother was just with him today. He is recovering well. But they said because he didn't get the Regeneron the evening that he was diagnosed, it's going to take a lot longer for the Regeneron to work in his system. And also after 2 weeks, you can't even take the Regeneron because it's not going to work. So there's people out there that have had COVID for 2 weeks that are not even eligible to take the Regeneron because infectious diseases has not approved them.
They're doing it on purpose too, I think.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, my, and we couldn't even see my grandfather. The whole third floor where my grandfather was blocked. We couldn't see him. We saw him on FaceTime for 2 minutes. And, you know, there's a picture up on my Facebook with my grandfather. From 4 weeks ago to today, it is day and night. My grandfather looks like death warmed over. He looks like Uncle Fester from the Addams Family. He has never looked like that before in his life. And that's because that's what happens at a facility when your loved one has COVID and they don't treat them properly or take care of them. They start to lose their coloring. They start to lose their energy.
Right.
I mean, he looks like they didn't put any vitamins or nutrients into my grandfather. My mother made her famous chicken soup for my grandfather, and he did eat a little bit of it. Thank God we call it, it's Jewish penicillin. and because we're Jewish, as you know. And yeah. And my grandparents, my grandfather owned a restaurant with my grandmother in D.C., Baron's Gourmet Deli, for many years. And that chicken soup was given to Larry King, retired Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. Many famous people ate at my grandfather's restaurant. Hosni Mubarak came to my grandfather's restaurant.
Wow.
Very famous people. So, I mean, that chicken soup was made for him with all the love from my late grandmother into my mother's soul went into
I'll
the heart of that chicken soup for my grandfather. Yeah, if you need
mail me
chicken
a court.
Soup, Mark, let us know. But this is what's going on in facilities. The facilities, they don't have it together, and they don't care. And they have, I talked to facilities that have had their Regeneron shots for months, and they are not giving it to patients that are immediately diagnosed positive with COVID-19. And I say to facilities today, if you have patients that are diagnosed positive with COVID-19, you need to administer the Regeneron shot, and you need to save their lives, because these people are they're going to die. It's really sad.
And they're trying not to let the fact that there's alternative treatments out there, because if there's alternative treatments, their serum, their poison, will never be approved. They can't approve it. It can't be legally approved if there's other treatments.
Well, the CDC, they approved remdesivir, which we have heard that it causes kidney failure. So they had to unapprove it because there was too many bad effects with remdesivir. Remdesivir was the only thing that Dr. Fauci approved. But the FDA has approved hydroxychloroquine for 50 years. The FDA has approved ivermectin for 35 years. Dr. Fauci stated, and I quote him directly, in 2005 and in his emails in 2017, that hydroxychloroquine works for SARS-CoV-2. And that's why President Trump used it, and that's why President Trump pushed it. But because President Trump pushed it, you know, they did politics, and they said, and Dr. Fauci said, no, don't use hydroxychloroquine, it doesn't work.
That's crazy that they would put politics over people.
Right. Correct. And when President Trump, COVID-19, he said that Regeneron helped him, and that's why he recovered so quickly. Dr. Ben Carson used it to recover because he almost died from COVID, and so did Rudy Giuliani. And that's what we need to remember, and that's what we need to push out. I don't know why these doctors, I don't know why infectious diseases are not approving the Regeneron. The governor specifically stated this is to help people with high risk, people that are 65 years or older, people that have actually been exposed to COVID-19 or someone with COVID-19, that's where the Regeneron needs to go to. And the quicker you get it to the patient, the faster they will recover. It is stated that Regeneron will improve the person within 48 hours. So if you are a facility that has Regeneron and you have COVID-19 positive patients, you need to use it immediately or it's going to be a huge problem.
And if they have it and they're not treating, that means they're neglecting their duties to the Hippocratic Oath to save people and make people better.
What happens to the Hippocratic Oath? They make them a statistic. I was not going to allow that facility to make my grandfather a statistic. I was not going to allow that facility to let my grandfather die. That's why I took the necessary steps with my mother to contact the governor's office and to make sure that my grandfather got the care that he needed, because the facility was not doing anything to help my grandfather being tested for positive for COVID-19.
Well, it's really great that he was able to get the treatment and others at the facility were able to get the treatment. If you were to tell somebody who is against, you know, oh my God, the evil Ron DeSantis, what a horrible governor, you know, oh my goodness, it's Ron, death sentence, and, you know, all the crazy people that talk so horribly about our great governor. What would you say to those folks about the great governor?
I would say you're completely wrong. You're completely wrong. I met Governor Ron DeSantis when he was a congressman up in D.C. I drove with him to Mar-a-Lago when he first announced he was running for governor of Florida. He means what he says and says what he does. Everything he campaigned on, he has done that and then some. He's a phenomenal governor.
Amen.
I couldn't imagine anybody else who would have been our governor. I mean, we could have had that guy, Andrew Gillum, who would have destroyed Florida. I said to the people at Benderson, I said, what if we got the other guy? I mean, it's insane why people would go
how
out
close
to
were we?
Ron DeSantis when he is actually helping people. He has banned the mandation of COVID-19 vaccines. He has banned mask mandates in the state of Florida. He has banned critical race theory. He works with FIBA, the Florida Israel Business Accelerator, which Florida and Israel have a trade agreement together, which helps with Sunrise Florida, when that collapse happened. I mean, he is on top of everything, and he's just a wonderful governor, and I love him, and my whole family loves him, and again, we are very grateful to him, and
amen.
We are
hallelujah.
So happy that he did this for my grandpa.
Yes,
and my
DeSantis 22.
Another day. We say in Hebrew, Baruch Hashem, praise be to the Lord. My grandfather gets to live another day because of Governor Ron DeSantis and Dr. Kenneth Shepke and his team.
A World War II veteran, for God's sakes. That's amazing. Why would you would think just based on that fact that they would have rushed everything to save this man's life.
I agree. And I agree. Because
like,
he is 98 and a half, they were like, well, he's old. You know, oh, your grandfather's just old. He's just old. You know, he's 98 and a half. He's old.
Grandpa's old, and you're an idiot. You're an idiot for saying he's old. We know he's old. Look at him. He's in a facility for old people. We know he's old. Now get him right. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
what the hell's wrong with these people?
He didn't deserve to suffer like that. He didn't deserve to suffer like that.
No, no. And I would be calling Mr. Sabatini and say, hey, Anthony, what can we do here? You know, we got to get these people. We can't let them treat old folks like this because they're old. That's a horrible thing. Old or not, they're still loved, and they still have love in their hearts and minds and souls. And they, if they're kicking and they're happy, you better save them. What happened to these doctors and their oaths that they take to save the lives?
Yep, it wasn't his time. It was not his time to go. Hashem, he said, it's not his time to go, and I was not going to let my grandfather go. Not like that. Not after he served our nation.
I would love to have him on the show so he could tell stories. Let's just hear the stories of our historians, our living historians, 98 and a half years old, folks. Now, this is living history right before your eyes.
Yeah.
When he was 10 years old, think about it, the difference of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
81 years ago, 88 years ago, when he was 10 years old. Amazing stuff. I want to thank you so much for coming on and telling your story, because Governor DeSantis, we want you to be our governor for another 4 years. I'll be voting for him in 2022, and I will be screaming for him to be in the White House in 2028, because we can't go we can't never go wrong. We can get Trump back in 24 and then DeSantis in 28. We can straighten this mess out maybe. Holy moly. Who knows, you know? Because we know right now, if President Trump was in office, Afghanistan would still be a nice place for women and girls to go to school and, you know, do things and move freely about and for people to live their lives. Instead, there's thousands surrounded in an airport by the Taliban. Thousands and thousands of Americans being told, make it to the airport, but we can't guarantee safe passage. Like, really? For crying out loud, it just turns my stomach that we're witnessing what's happening right now. We were screaming. How many rallies did you go to, Alexandria, for Trump? How can anybody in their right mind believe
second
that President Trump lost?
In Sarasota with 45,000 people. It's amazing rally.
Never seen the enthusiasm for a former president. No president in history of this planet could get 45,000 people to a little town in Florida. But this guy does it. It's unbelievable. And they're going to tell me that he lost. I will never believe. I watched long segments of Mike Lindell's symposium, Cyber Symposium. The proof was laid out for all to see. And what do you hear? Crickets. Mainstream media, silence. They know, and you would think now they might go, well, maybe we were wrong. Oh, my God, look what we got. But I was talking with my wife earlier, Alexandria, and I was saying, sweetheart, they might impeach him or get him out on the 25th Amendment. But that leaves us with Kamala Harris and the dread on her face when I said that. And then if she doesn't work out, Nancy Pelosi's next. Could you imagine President Pelosi? Because that will be the goal. Once she's that close, you might see Kamala Harris wind up like Seth Rich or somebody like that who accidentally gets hurt. You know, it's really scary stuff to think about because these people want power. Nancy Pelosi, I think, wants power that badly that she would go that far to try to achieve the presidency by backdoor, crooked, you know, evil ways. It's a scary thought. Either way, President Harris or President Pelosi or President Biden. It doesn't matter. We lose no matter what. It's really so bad that it's that thick at the top. Scary. Again, I want to thank you for coming on the show. God bless your grandfather. Maybe have him call the show with you one day and could tell us a great story of the past and reminisce
Definitely.
About the good times of his youth and the raising of his family to have such an amazing person like you who fights so hard for our country. And is a fantastic singer, by the way. Hey, speaking of singing, do you go and sing anywhere? I would love to come out. I love the style.
Oh, I do. Yeah, I do. I've been up in the Maryland, Washington, D.C. area. I've been singing at a lot of different political events. And I was going to say, when the political cycle starts to progress and more races are starting to unfold, I'll be singing a lot more throughout the country.
We had Hada on the show singing the national anthem.
I would love that.
Hada sang the national anthem here live on the air. That was amazing. The American Idol contestant. She was gracious to sing. And we would love maybe one day for you to sing the national anthem live on our show. Maybe not today,
but
excellent. I want to thank you again so much. You're an awesome patriot. Tell the girls of Jexit we say hello and tell your grandfather. God bless him, and we are glad he's doing well.
Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate it.
You're awesome. Take care.
Bye.
Ooh, folks, then that was a heck of an episode right there. You cannot go wrong. We really were hitting on all cylinders tonight with a conservative perspective and the passion of Jane Fostick, the captain himself, sitting in the chair and running the show. Thanks, James, for another great episode of A Conservative Perspective, and we'll be back next Thursday. I think next Thursday I'm on. No, yes, maybe. I don't know. I have a friend flying in from up north, and I'm not sure what day. So next week I might not have a show. Stay tuned. But we got some things we're working on. We're trying to get some names and some good guests. But if you don't want to hear my show and we're not pulling off the guests you want to hear, we got a whole bunch of shows going on. You know, we got Ron Edwards, The American Experience on Sunday, 3 p.m. We have the United Patriots Uprising with Gary Binford. He's every other Monday. What a great episode he had last week, blowing the lid off critical race theory. And author Kevin White and his show, American Allegiance, on Tuesday nights. Sorry, on Wednesday nights. And A Conservative Perspective, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. And, of course, Patriot Nation Radio live. 8 p.m. Thursdays with your favorite host, Mark Hoffman. And with that, I want to say there is no show without you guys, and we're going to dig through this amazing soundboard of awesome tunes that we have here. We have to really maybe go through this soundboard because I got to really go down to find my favorite song by our good friend Dave Bray. DaveBrayUSA.com, Music on a Mission Storyteller Edition, is out. It's been out for a while. He's got some new songs on there. He's out and about doing things. So you want to check out DaveBrayUSA.com. And, of course, you heard the ad way early on for Liberty Rush, LibertyRush.com. Social media without the libtarded rhetoric. Please join me as we listen to the Star-Spangled Banners performed by Dave Bray, DaveBrayUSA.com.